Welcome into the Producer and Pipe Bomb Podcast here on 105.7 FM, thefan.com. A lot of podcasts going on at the station now. The Tim and Tausch podcast.
That one sucks.
Oh, it's awful. But it's taking over the world. And just because those guys are assholes, we're doing our own, the Producer.
That's right. Yeah. Put them in their place.
Absolutely.
So, Billy, how you doing?
Good, guys. Good.
Hey, that's
finally somebody turns up the fucking heat at this place. if you're going to do it, I mean, let's have some shop. Let's have some fun.
Yeah, there's Baby Tausch from the Tim and Tausch horrible podcast, which I listen to every
garbage.
Week.
Garbage.
I haven't missed an episode
yet. I don't know why you would
want
to subscribe to that or any of these other podcasts on the radio.com app. It makes no sense.
Well, I will say one of the reasons why that you might want to subscribe to all of them is because, you know, you enjoy the people that we work with.
Yes.
Nah, that's not
you
it.
You enjoy the station, and you want to make sure that everyone is feeling good about themselves. Everyone's self-esteem is high because we are encouraging and trying to continue the prosperity of everyone that we work with. Was that good?
Yeah, that was a pretty good. That was a pretty good plug.
Okay, that's a lot of bullshit, but that's good.
Yeah.
Or you can listen to
it. Full
of
it. I'm 340 pounds.
Nice. Or you can listen to it because we don't get a whole lot of airtime, and you want to know how we think about shit.
A little bit. Yeah, for sure. I like it.
Absolutely. Well, we got an awesome show for you guys today. Talk a little Packers, a little Brewers, a little holiday, a little randoms, you know, whatever. Pops in my mind. Now, one thing that it's about a week old, but the Minnesota Viking, Brett Favre, supports a passing of a federal law banning tackle football for kids 12 and under. And so what I kind of want to do, and I know it's called the Professor and Pipe Bomb, but I want to go to throw this one at Baby Tausch first, because I want you guys to listen to the wrong answer before you listen to the right answer. So, Billy, do you support the Vikings' thoughts there?
I do. I think that into a stage of the life and the progression of a player, these kids want to mimic what they see on TV, right? And when you're watching the NFL, you're watching some of the best athletes in the world be able to have this violent collision, play this game that we all love, but it happens in a split second. And you're seeing these guys that have been trained to make these plays and make these kinds of hits for 15, 16 years. And then, you know, Stevie comes in here. He's 9 years old. His pads are hanging off of him. His helmet barely fits. And his coaches haven't played football in 16, 20 years. And there's a disconnect in how the game can be taught and a disconnect in how these kids can continue to grow as athletes. And I totally get the philosophy, because I started playing tackle football when I was 10. I'm a hypocrite in this sense, I guess you could say. When I was 10, I started playing tackle and I couldn't wait. I ran home. My dad was telling me the story like 2 weeks ago. And I was driving home with him, and I had the helmet in my hands, and I was like, "Oh, Dad, I can't wait to hit somebody! I'm so excited."
Now, you obviously weren't as big as you are now, but were you still as proportionately a large of an individual as you were then?
Yeah, okay. For sure. And I was always one of the biggest kids, and I played up a grade because I was a little bit older, and I was one of the bigger kids, so I took advantage of it. But looking back in hindsight and seeing the hits that I took later on, guys, when the game sped up and the competition got better, when you're taking those 2 years off, and the 12 years old is, I think it can get misconstrued, because it's like you're in sixth or seventh grade. I started playing when I was in fourth grade. And those 2 years, I think there's enough that you can learn in the development and the enhancement of flag football and the ways that you can teach leverage and proper technique. When you learn those without the pads, I think it becomes that much more understanding to these kids when you teach them that the pads aren't a weapon. What they are is protection, and you're still using, you're playing body weight, but now you have something on you to help you out. Whereas when I got my first pair of shoulder pads and into, you know, when I was a junior, senior in high school, I was using it as a weapon. I saw that I had something that I could kind of hurt somebody with, and that's part of the game. But you teach how to play the game through leverage and body weight at the lower age than when you can put the pads on when you're 12 years old. I think there's more understanding of how the game can be played and how you can use your body, not just the equipment, to give an advantage of against your opponent. Now, Pipe Bomb, tell me why I am wrong.
Well, let's hear from the professor first. Let's see if I'm outnumbered or if I've got an ally.
Yeah, no, I agree with 100% of everything you just said.
You fucking serious?
Yeah, I'm 100% serious.
Okay.
You don't go playing basketball on a full size rim right away. You don't play baseball on a full size diamond, and so for all sorts of reasons, because kids' bodies aren't capable of competing with things that grown ups do. So if it's not right for them to do that, then just don't have them do that. Don't allow them to header in soccer either, for that matter. If it's that much of a concern, don't let them play ice hockey.
Well, and they don't
until
let
a certain
you, they don't
age.
They don't let you check in hockey until you're in high school, pretty much across the country in different leagues. They do take those kind of precautions in other sports. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I think there's a certain amount of calculated risk that you take in everything that you do. You know, I think people are quick to point the finger and kind of with like a football is evil kind of thing, or like football is ruining America type thing. But every time you get in a car and, you know, you go down Grange Avenue here and take a left on Highway 100, you're running the risk of someone, you know, you could get in a car accident, but that doesn't stop you from getting in the car. You know, there's certain levels of risk that are okay and certain levels of risk that maybe aren't okay. And, I think it's, you know, using that car analogy, like you have things in that car that help kind of moderate the level of risk that you're taking every time you get in a car. So to me, this is just moderating the level of risk. It's not eliminating it, because even without the pads, these two kids could just be, you know, running around and still just like clock skulls and get their bell rung. It's just,
you can get hurt playing tag on the playground, right?
Yeah, you get hurt doing everything. Yep. So, you know, I don't really have a problem with it. And I think like what you said, it teaches the game at a fundamental level. Which is, you know, if you ever watch Packer film, it's very obvious that most guys on that defense don't know how to tackle. So I'm all for teaching kids fundamentals. And then, you know, maybe it doesn't have to be 12, but just whenever, I'm not a scientist, whenever the scientists decide that.
Well, you're as close as we have to a scientist at the
side of the three.
That's why we respect the opinion.
Well, yeah, Jeff's Polish.
Yeah, I'm the Polish scientist.
Yeah.
So, okay, you're both wrong. Okay, first of all, I'm not letting a damn Viking tell me how to raise my kids. Okay, there's that. Now, second of all, and Brett Favre's an asshole. Second of all, okay, 12 years old, why is that the magical number? With all the push by the NFL for the whole heads-up program, reteaching all these youth coaches how to teach tackling, how to teach proper technique, it's getting safer every single day. And okay, so you say, oh, well, you know, the helmet barely fits and, you know, the pads are hanging off these kids. Well, they're hanging off all the other kids that are playing too. It's not like little Timmy, who's 12 years old, is going up against a 16-year-old and getting freaking smoked. He's going against other stupid little 12-year-old kids. You know, so, you know.
But doesn't that raise the risk, though? Because then neither of them know what they're doing. Neither of them can use the equipment to the right effect. I get what you're saying. He's not going up against a high school kid.
Right.
But if he's going up against another kid that doesn't understand the proper advantage and disadvantage of it, isn't that just as dangerous?
I don't think so, because especially, like I said, with the push for the improved coaching and improved methods in tackling.
For sure.
And, you know, the general wussification of the sport in general that's been taking place in all sports. It is safer for the kids. Now, no one wants to talk about the fact that soccer has more concussions than football. Mm-hmm. No one wants to talk about that, oh, precious little Timmy on the soccer field runs more of a risk of getting, you know, seriously hurt than people that play football. Because for some reason, football, and it's, you know, whether it's all the sheep that buy into the concussion movie and CTE and everything like that, you know, whether it's this massive paranoia that, oh, football's evil, and, you know, you play football, and by 35, you're going to drool on yourself and commit suicide. I just don't buy it. I don't buy it.
The heads-up football thing that you bring up, Jeff, is a really, really good point, because they have made it so much more they have put the emphasis on the teaching of the game, and you're totally right. What the NFL has done is they're making the game safer at the youth levels at that point. But what I think is also happening in the same spot, when they're doing this heads-up football movement, they're noticing that there's too many people that are teaching the game that whatever qualification and heads-up football training that you can get, they're still going to go back to their roots. They're still going to go back to the roots of saying, hey, man, when I was learning how to play the game, 30 minutes a day, you, Anthony, and Jeff, you're lining up Oklahoma drill.
I love that.
And we're lining it up. Or we're going tackle alley. Tackle alley was the one that we used to do.
So you'd have
10 guys lining up, everybody's face in the middle. One guy's at the end of the line on the right, the other's at the bottom of the left, and you run around the guys, and you meet right in the middle, and whoever gets out is the winner. It's bull in the ring. And there can be a place for that. I get it. There's a toughness that you have to play football, but when you're a 10-year-old kid, all I was seeing when I was growing up was Mike Allstott running over a linebacker going in, diving for a touchdown with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That guy was 240.
You were doing tackle alley at 10 years old?
Yeah, every day.
That's awesome.
Every day, 3 days a week. And that's where however much training you can get, I still think that there are enough people that, I don't want to say they're unqualified, but they haven't gotten a grasp on exactly what has led to the concussion movies, what has led to the fear of CTE, the repetitive nonstop hitting of the head and clanking and knocking the side of your head against the ground. And there's a lot that you can be taught playing the game. And like you said, not learning how to tackle, you can do that with your body weight, going into a pad and figuring out the hog roll, finding the technique that it brings to, at once you get the pads on, your understanding and the body, the mental muscle memory is the muscle memory is now built up in you
because you were doing those Oklahoma drills when you were 10.
Exactly. And you see, I'm on 23 and I'm feeling it, but you're finding the way that you've already learned that your hips drive through and that's where your power gets. It's not when you lower your head and you try to ram on through the line. So I think when you give the opportunity to learn the game, the fundamental levels of just your body, I think it's a lot safer. But I get the fact of the 12-year-old thing of how that's the magic number, too.
I don't get why that's the magic number.
I think it would be a grade level is how I would see this coming down to. If it starts at 7th grade, you get 2 years, you can learn how to use the equipment. You could have been playing flag football for 5 years now, and then you get 2 years to learn the pads before you get into high school. And for the opportunities that I've gotten given to me for playing football, you need a couple of years to get into high school before you're now on the prime stage of trying to play at the next level.
Yeah. Anthony? Yeah.
Well, I think you were kind of getting at it a little bit there. I think that, you know, when someone like you says it, or when someone like Brett Favre says it, who have had tremendous opportunity dealt them by the game of football, to then still have the peace of mind to look back and say, yeah, you know what, in hindsight, some of those things, maybe those weren't the best idea.
But in the same vein, I would go back and do it again.
Right.
I would do it again in a heartbeat.
We've experienced this now at a different level. You know, we're not saying don't do it. We're just saying, let's just change how we do it.
We can be smarter about it.
We can be smarter about it. And I think I think part of it too, that and we've kind of been kind of beating around the bush a little bit. A lot of these things all factor into, like you talked about muscle memory, and you had mentioned some things too, Jeff. A lot of this just breaks down essentially into like the speed of the game. That if you don't have the muscle memory, the pace that the game moves at nowadays, you're just a sitting duck. You're just sitting out there waiting to get your bell rung.
It's the old philosophy of, if you're not going 100% playing like you're going to get scared,
right,
you're going to get hurt, and scared that you're going to get hurt, you're going to get hurt.
Right. Yeah. That's 100% true. So I think there's an underlying aspect here about the speed of the game. And it's different for us because we're all guys that watch football, for lack of a better word, professionally. We're professional football watchers.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It's pretty cool to say professional football watchers. I don't know how that would respond, you know, for you single folks with the ladies. But
I'm gonna start using that now.
I'm a professional football watcher, yeah. That we can keep up with it, and like you, Baby Talish, have played, but it's hard for me to believe that for the average NFL viewer across the country, that the speed of the game at this point is even captivating, because it's so bang bang for the casual viewer that they have no idea what's going on until they see the replay in slow motion. So I don't think it's actually even a bad idea to start. If you start at the youth level, it might even help slow down the game a little bit, because guys are going to pause and think about making these right decisions. And I think it can improve the product in terms of the audience's reception when those kids do get to the NFL level, because right now it's just so quick that it's not even a good product, and the refs can't break anything down fast enough.
It's not even
they're professional football watchers.
The
cameramen can't follow it. It's just too fast. Like, you just watch film from like 10 years ago, and it's like watching a flag football game let the YMCA over there off of a out in Greenfield, because it's just so slow, and it's just been getting so exponentially fast that at this point the product isn't even the game. The product is highlight compilations and video replays.
Well, I love that you brought up the fact that we're hearing this from the Viking, Brett Favre, and from Baby Tausch, because if you ask 9 out of 10 football players in the league today, they will say that they would take a head hit over somebody taking their knees out every single day of the week.
Yeah, well, the short-term benefits of that are a lot more in your favor. You can keep making millions while you're getting your body hurt. If you take your knees out, you're done.
But there's also a brotherhood feel to it. Like, if you're gonna hit me where I can see you, hit me where I can respond, not taking, you know, below the belt shots. I agree with what you're saying, John.
You know, one of my concerns is so we sit there, we start these kids later. So now high school football is peewee football, and college football is high school football, and then the quality of the NFL game dips down to college because these kids are starting later, and yes, you know, okay, so maybe some of them, you know, obviously they're not understanding it like a 15 or an 18-year-old in high school or a 20-year-old kid, but they're still starting later.
But I disagree. I disagree with how the 7-on-7 game is going, how the travel circuit is going, and you're showing these athletes are becoming better than they've ever been, but a lot of it is, Jeff, because of what they're doing in the offseason without the pads on already. Like Graham Mertz, have you seen him throw a football in pads? All you're seeing him, he's going to be the quarterback for the Badgers probably in about 3 years. All you're seeing him in is in shorts and throwing at these 7-on-7 clinics, and that is where these guys are learning the route running and the skill progression, the coverage skills, understanding leverage in running routes. And once you can learn how to tackle, the tackling might be a little bit farther behind, but if we learn how to play the game at a level where you can break the things down and learn your own leverage body weight style, I don't know if that's going to be as much of an issue.
Okay, but we started out the segment by having the professor, the smartest man in the room, Mr. Mandela, say that if you watch the Packers defense, you can tell that there's no fundamentals at all on that team. How does starting these people later improve the fundamentals when you have professional athletes that don't know what the hell they're doing fundamental-wise anyway in the league right now?
Well, you can go ahead.
You guys ever watch rugby?
Yes.
You see how they tackle in rugby?
Mm-hmm.
And it's forced upon keeping yourself up and hitting between the chest and the knees.
That's where your center of gravity is.
Right in
the
center of gravity.
That's the easiest way to take a guy down.
And finding the leverage points. It's a lot like wrestling, where you're finding ways to manipulate somebody's own force.
So I just throw them in a figure four leg lock and call it a day.
But that's the thing. And the figure four leg lock style of football is running at somebody and diving head first, shoulder first into, you know, their chest or up into their shoulder pads and trying to take them out that way. So I think once you break it down and you keep the element of protection away at first, you have to rely on the leverage points and you have to rely on the fundamentals.
Yeah, and I think you were just kind of getting at it a little bit, Jeff, but the underlying thing, the fundamentals, adding or taking away time doesn't make it better or worse if they're still practicing the wrong things with that time.
But you're assuming that every kid is practicing the wrong things the wrong way.
Well, not every kid, but certainly a lot of them. Think about how many times, like even just like with a sport like baseball, where they need a little league team, and some kid's dad doesn't know anything about baseball, but he's just like, yeah, I guess I'll do it just so that the kids can play. That happens in other sports too, including football. Guys that don't know how to coach it are coaching it, and that's not a knock on them as guys. Like, they're doing it for a good reason. They want the kids to be able to play. But there's this common misconception that practice makes perfect. Practice makes permanent. So if you practice it the wrong way for more time, you will continue those habits until you're older. If you start later, but you're learning it the right way at a later age, that's going to help when you get down the road.
I didn't hear a word you said after practice makes permanent. That is such fucking gold. I was writing it down. I didn't hear nothing.
That's locked in.
Credit to Doug Stewart, one of my high school teachers.
And guys, I'm really not bashing the game, because like you said, Anthony, I have gotten opportunities that I never thought I would have because of the game of football.
You probably wouldn't be here right now without it.
There's a very, very good point.
You might not have been at Carroll. You might not have been able to get the internship to get the foot in the door and get the whole thing going.
You might be sleeping under a viaduct somewhere.
It helped me in ways that I could have never even imagined. But when I look back on it and I look at like when I was playing at this age, and don't think that I'm trying to say like playing college football makes you able to teach football. I do not agree with that. You can learn the right ways to teach football and coach football even if you've never played the game, but you understand what the game is.
Most of the best coaches were average players at best.
When growing up, I think there was one coach that I had growing up that played football at a college level. And like Anthony, you said, there were dads that were coaching the team who were the ones that really all they wanted to do was hang out at the park and sit in a lawn chair and watch us practice, but no one else was going to do it, so they had to run you through drills.
Yeah.
But to Jeff's point, like you said earlier, man, the NFL is taking the initiative of making this game safer at the youth levels with the heads-up football clinics, and Gary is a huge component of it. He taught the game the right way, and I commend him for that. But I do believe that if you just take 1 to 2 years off the bottom end, I don't think it's going to have as drastic of an issue and drastic of a change than it did now. Because when I was playing, there were moms that didn't want their kids playing football because they thought they were going to get hurt. If you teach them how to play the game when there's not pads and all they have is the leather padding on their head to make sure that when you clank heads, you're not making full contact and shaking your head around. I think you will teach parents, not only players, how to play the game the right way and advocate the game the right way.
I think too, there are some people, and I get it too, because it's hard not to get yourself, you know, you get a little bit juiced when you see someone really just cracking pads.
No doubt.
Whether it's Sunday or Saturday or some Friday Night Lights. Type
or Tuesday
action.
During one-on-ones, dude.
Yeah,
that was
whatever
the best
it is.
Part of the week.
That's certainly a part of it. But at least for me, and I think for a lot of other football fans, there's just as much enjoyment watching the strategy and watching the athleticism on display. Just guys making plays that even without the almost grotesquely violent aspect of it, it can still be a really, really enjoyable sport to watch. Just watching guys still executing blocks, hitting holes out of the backfield, running routes, tackling. Swatting balls out of the air. Mm-hmm. There are enough things about the game itself that I don't think the NFL... I think the NFL for a while, when they were coming into their own, they had to predicate their business on being violent because that's what made them different. That's not what makes them different anymore. So I think they need to look at what their sport actually is, and instead of branding themselves as this violent... instead of branding themselves as violent and making sure that you're keeping up like this super fast speed of play... and this violent aspect, that you start highlighting the things that also make the sport compelling.
Wow. All right, well, to tie a bow on it, no. I like it violent. It's supposed to be violent. I think people are overreacting. If you just look at things that are changing today, you know, you see guys wearing pink shirts now. You see man buns on grown-ass men. Things are going in the wrong direction. Leave my football
Billy,
violent.
What's that on the back of your head?
Leave it old school.
Is that a bun? Are you doing
that's
a bun
not
right
a bun.
Now?
No, it'll be all good. Pipe Bomb and I are going to go do an Oklahoma drill. Settle all this down.
I'll get my whistle.
I'm in. Just let me dial 9-1.
Isn't that interesting how that works, though? 2 votes to 1. It's like we live in a country where the votes don't count.
Well, oh, wow.
Hey.
That's why he's the professor. He brings the politics.
See, hello. But yeah. So okay.
Find my work at CNN.
Hippie. So if you're
definitely not Fox News with that.
If
comment.
You're keeping score at home, it's 1-0.
He won fair and square. It's just the votes didn't count. It is what it is. What are you gonna do? Bitch about it?
All right. So we'll do a little lightning round segment here. Okay, death is not an option. Professor, we start with you. Hunley, Kaiser, or any other breathing human being?
For the backup job for this season?
Well, I'm not talking for fucking president. Yeah, well, for the backup job behind a healthy Aaron Rodgers.
Kaiser.
Okay.
Yeah, I would agree, Kaiser.
I think he got a really bad rap in Cleveland last year because, first of all, basically no talent anywhere on that roster, including him. Especially with Joe Thomas going down, that's about a scrap heap of a team as you could possibly find on the offensive side of the ball. And it's really easy for us to say, guys like Aaron Rodgers, they step right in, or guys like Brett Favre, they step right in. Well, those guys inherited some pretty good playmakers and some pretty good pass
some
blockers.
Some vital positions, yeah.
At some key positions, and also had a chance to play with some good defenses that could help them kind of manage the game. It makes picking it up a lot easier. DeShone Kizer could play at Notre Dame, and there have been many interviews, whatever you want to call it, articles written about guys that have coached DeShone Kizer and how his mental capability of the game for where he's at exceeds where he's at in terms of just his physical development as a man. Like he's still so young and so lanky that he hasn't had a chance to kind of get that grown-up football body that you really need to excel at this level. Kind of like Giannis in basketball.
Sure.
What did we see when Giannis's body caught up to his effort and his mental capacity and passion for learning the game?
Yeah, he was able to take
it. I'm not saying DeShone Kizer is going to be the second coming, but that was not a good first impression in Cleveland because he didn't have got anyone there to help pick him up and because he just wasn't physically ready to be thrown into that starting role. But he played for Cleveland, so he kind of had to. He was the default starter.
For sure. Now, do we have a clean sweep, or are you going to go with boy number seven?
No, I think he's going with any other breathing human.
Get Taysom Hill back here?
You know, yeah,
well,
Taysom Hill, Dolly Parton, you know, anybody. You know, we obviously Hunley, you know, there's no way in hell I ever want to see him play another down of football for the Packers. Kaiser, you know... Okay, so he's smart and he's a nerd. That doesn't mean he can play. And if I had a dollar,
Peyton Manning was a pretty big nerd.
Peyton Manning is one of the most overrated quarterbacks of all time.
Physically. You're right.
I think he's more impressive physically. The tools that he has, he can play.
Well, you know, and that's why I would be willing to give him a shot. Now, you know, I sort of want to get into the whole Peyton Manning thing now because you're a Manning fan.
I'm a Manning fan. Well, I wouldn't say I'm any more a Manning fan in particular than I am any of the other people that have ever been in a GOAT conversation at any point in their career.
You would put him in a GOAT conversation?
He should be in the conversation, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. God, no chance.
He should be in the
Why
conversation.
Not? He is so overrated.
Why?
Okay, so he's got two Super Bowl wins.
Yep.
The second one he got with Denver when he was horse shit and he sucked and he rode the coattails of the Denver defense.
Okay, so then can we wipe out Tom Brady's two, that Adam Vinatieri one for him?
No, because Brady had to drive him down the field
position
for
Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning still had to put them in position in that Denver game. You can't win if you don't score.
And then the first one he won, he played, and it deserves an asterisk because he beat the Chicago Bears and Rex Grossman in a Super Bowl. And if you want to say that that's a legitimate feat and something to be celebrated, I think you're crazy. But anyway, to move on here. Confidence levels in Joe Philbin.
I stayed quiet during that one.
That might be a podcast for another day.
I wasn't going to get involved.
We could probably, between the three of us, or probably even just me by myself, I could probably roll for like an hour podcast just going off about the GOAT argument in any given sport.
Yeah.
All right.
So that might be our next installment.
I'm in. But okay, confidence level in Joe Philbin heading into this season.
Are we talking like a scale of 1 to 10 type thing?
1 to 10, A to F. 2 to 8 to F because there's only what? A, B, C.
Okay.
E, only five choices.
See, I didn't know what you meant
it's
at first.
For
I didn't know what you
understand.
Meant by that. I literally didn't know what you meant by that
yeah,
at first.
A to F.
I forgot
like,
F was even a grade.
Like, what?
I forgot F was even a grade, so I didn't even know where you were going with that.
He definitely didn't hang out with you and I, Pipe Bob.
No.
I think the lowest grade I ever had on a report card was like a B minus.
See, now I never ended up finishing with an F. But there were definitely times when I got scared.
You were down there with fishes?
Oh, man. When you're sitting there pipe bomb with like about a week and a half before the report cards come out, fuck, how the hell am I going to get away with this one?
I would say confidence level in Joe Philbin, I'm in this like the C+, B- territory.
Okay.
That's just me. Just because if C is average, I don't think it's going to be significantly better or worse than last year. But given how well he worked with Aaron and how the offense looked the last time he had a crack at it, gives me reason to believe. And what he was able to do also last year with Indy, just kind of makeshifting something together when he was part of the staff there, it gives me more reason to believe that it might be a little bit better than last year as opposed to a little bit worse. But I don't think there's going to be a big improvement.
Would your grade be different if Philbin was calling the plays as opposed to the idiot?
No, I don't think so. I think they're equal caliber minds when it comes to drawing up a play or calling them throughout 60 minutes of football.
Bill?
I think the comfort level between the two is going to be really, really good again. And what the two had the opportunity to do when Philbin was here the last time. And it really sounded like Joe took a lot of pressure off of Mike midweek. In the organization, the setting up of how the game plan was going to look, how the meetings were going to look, how the structure was going to look. There's a lot of different things on a head coach's plate when you're going through practice plans and making sure that you're able to dictate how these guys' schedules are going to be when you only have a certain amount of time with them that's allowed by the league. I don't know if you're going to see any changes that you can really quantify in – you know, the run pass splits or how many times you see an out route compared to a dig. But I don't know. I don't know why you wouldn't be encouraged. They were 15-1 and the best offense in football when he was here the last time. So
I think some people too, they get caught up in like right now, Sean McVay's offense is the hot ticket in town, right? Just like Chip Kelly's was, just like the Wildcat was down in Miami. It ultimately boils down. It's not that complex of a game if you do it right, and I think some teams, like the Rams this past year, they don't have the right pieces and the right talent to just play solid fundamental offensive football. So they have to draw up crazy plays and hope that they can outsmart you.
Well,
or
you
out-think
have to dictate
you.
To the talent that you have,
and right, you sure. have to dictate to the talent that you have. So I think the Packer offense for a few years just hasn't had the horses in the stable, and they've been trying to pretend like they do. And I think that Joe Philbin coming back to town and having gone and come back might be able to kind of snap them back to reality a little bit in terms of the personnel that they have.
Well, very rarely am I the beacon of positivity, but I'm a little more positive on this than
Sunshines
you guys.
Sunshines and rainbows and pipe bomb.
Yeah, that's my middle name, man. I think I'm going to go with a B+. I like Philbin.
I didn't give a grade, so I'd say a B, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I think he's going to make one hell of a difference. Mike Pettine.
A. I'm yeah, so stoked.
I'll put it at a B. But
I thought he got shafted so hard in Cleveland. That team looked better under him in Cleveland with less talent than they do now than that team has looked in basically my entire lifetime.
Yeah, and Jimmy Haslam just wanted him out.
Yeah, yeah, and that wasn't even him, you know, focusing just on what he does. That was him, you know, trying to handle, you know, all sorts of different things. And the defenses in New York with the Jets were great when he was there.
Fucking
and in Buffalo,
Johnny Manziel and Josh Gordon,
they were great.
Doing some lean.
Right. Right. And they still won like six damn games. That's more than they've won the past 4 years.
Crushing up Cody before kickoff.
And so I'm stoked. I'm stoked about Pettine. I think, you know, like I was talking before with the horses in the stable type thing, this defense is really, really low on talent, so it might not materialize year one because there's just not that many good players on it. But in terms of scheme and fundamentals and all that, I am stoked. I think that defense is going to take a huge step forward.
All right, Bill.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're going to get better as time goes on. You're not going to see a finished product week one, week three, week five, week seven. But once you start rolling and Rodgers keeps you in the race, once this weather changes into mid-November, I think he's going to be able to have taught enough, because they're going to have to bank on a lot of rookies. They're going to have to probably look at Josh Jackson playing in the nickel coverage. It looks like Jaire Alexander is going to be either a one, a two, or a three. So those guys are going to play, and depending on however much Tremont Williams can give you, if he can continue to play at 35. Mm-hmm.
And he looked really, really sharp when he played for Mike Pettine in Cleveland, too. I think he fits well in that scheme.
Even last year, he was one of the best cover corners in football down there in Arizona. Granted, he was playing across from Patrick Peterson, but
right.
In the same breath, that brings a lot more pressure on you when you're playing across the field.
Yeah, it sure does. I think, too, that's... That speaks to the level of the things that Dom Capers did. They knew that Tremont Williams wasn't a number one corner anymore. Perfect fit for a team like the Cardinals because they didn't need a number one corner. I think that Dom Capers for a long time was either in denial or the team was in denial. Just deciding, well, these are our guys, so they'll work because they're Packer guys.
Yeah, because they're Packers.
And that's not how it works. And so right now you're putting Tremont Williams in a much better situation to possibly even... You know, when this is all said and done, the way the depth chart shakes out could even be like the fourth option on this
season,
team because he's not a guy that can just go out there on your number one anymore like he used to do when we were winning Super Bowls. He's got a very specific skill set of what he can and can't contribute, and you need to put him in that position to succeed.
But if anybody takes care of his body, man, Tremont Williams takes care of that like it's a
temple. Yes, he does.
So.
Not like Matt Albers.
Yeah, right. Or Matt Jones. I was watching NFL Network earlier today.
The old receiver.
Dude. The quarterback turned receiver that was drafted in the first round by the Jags. They were doing like the caught in the draft thing. It was the same draft that Rodgers fell with Packers in 2005. There were five wide receivers taken in this draft. This is a name. These are names. Troy
ahead
Williamson.
Ahead of Rodgers, you mean?
In the first round. Five.
Wow.
So Troy Williamson started off at, I believe, 8.
Okay.
Mike Williams of the Detroit Lions was the 10th pick in the draft. Matt Jones was the 21st. I can't even remember the fourth one.
That shows you how good they were.
And then Roddy White wrapped it out at like 28.
Wow.
The only one that was even productive in the draft. But and the best part is Matt Jones, they show him like fucking
where are they now kind of
thing. No, right after his draft thing, ESPN's hanging out there. He's got his whole family there. They're all in the front yard just slamming brews, eating fucking nachos while he's getting picked.
I think Justin Blackman might have been watching that draft as his kid, and he's like, someday that's going to be me.
But nice. Pipe Bomb, how are you feeling about the defensive front that Pettine's going to have to work with?
I like it.
They're going to be able to put some pressure on the quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
And they've got depth finally. And I think that they will pick up one more D lineman once the cuts start getting made towards the end of camp. I think they'll bring somebody in just because, you know, obviously with the NFL being a copycat league, we all saw the success that the Eagles had shuffling fresh bodies in constantly. You know, we haven't had a sniff of a pass rush in years. And I think it's about to change.
Since
now,
Kevin Green left.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you got two or three guys in the middle of the defensive line that, you know, you probably have to double Mike Daniels at this point.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Kenny Clark made a pretty good case for you're going to have to double him in the run game last year.
Yep.
That leaves two guys possibly
Wilkerson's
out.
Wilkerson's no joke. Wilkerson's Lowry played good at times
joke.
Last
Lowry
year.
Lowry was solid. And that's how you open up one-on-one matchups for Nick Perry and Clay Matthews if they're going to be the guys on the outside. I also think that Reggie Gilbert kid is intriguing. Remember watching him a little bit late on in the season last year? He's big.
Roy loves him.
Loves him. Mike Clemens thinks he's tremendous. And Clemens also was talking a lot about your boy Equanimous.
Yeah. Equanimous.
Equanimous, sorry. That he just looks like he's going to be a great
Equanimous St. Brown.
Did Clemens have a shirt on when he was talking about these guys?
No, but he was eating my sandwich, though.
Oh, see? Okay. Now, I trust a shirtless Mike Clemens the most, and then I trust a stealing sandwich Mike Clemens the second most. When he's fully clothed.
I'm so sorry I didn't stop him, dude. I'm so sorry.
When he's fully clothed and not eating, I don't believe a word he says.
Mandela's got PTSD for losing his fucking chicken club.
Oh, it's dark days.
PTSD, CTE, all over a fucking sandwich. A
lot of letters
that was
here.
Funny.
All right. Well, let's move on to a easy topic here. Is the 4th of July the best holiday of the season, of the year?
It's my favorite.
Mine's definitely up there, man.
It's my favorite because my favorite things to do are be outside with, preferably with cold beer and with grilled meats, and that's pretty much the only holiday that it makes sense to do all three.
Okay.
Because in Wisconsin, you could do it on Memorial Day or Labor Day, but you're running the risk of it being like 45 degrees.
And raining.
And it's
also on a Monday. I mean, like, that's kind of what blew about the 4th of July this year, like being on a Wednesday. There were like two Mondays in the middle of the week.
But there were two Fridays also.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And then when you look at it as well, like Mandela said, I have a few hobbies in life outside of professional watcher of sports. I like to day drink. I like to darty. I like to grill with a beer. I like to play bags. We were playing some bags on the 4th.
Beersby, too. You ever played Beersby?
Oh, man, Beersby's a great game.
I never played that, but I played with Beersby's fun.
Okay, so Beersby. We started out with two poles about 15 feet away from each other, pipe bomb.
Okay.
You have an empty beer bottle on top of the pole. Usually you use like a PVC pipe.
Okay.
Yep.
Like maybe, I don't know, like the 2-inch
around. Just thick enough so like, you know, there's the divot kind of in the bottom of the beer bottle.
You can rest it right on.
It just kind of rests right on there.
So you got teams of two. You're on the same side as your teammate.
Okay.
So
house rules variations, but yeah.
Okay.
That's one way you can do it.
You guys will go with one.
I've played it a lot of different ways, but you explain it first.
Okay, so we'll run with your teammates on the side with you.
Mm-hmm.
And you fire the frisbee. You hit the bottle, it's one. You hit the pole, it's one. If they catch the bottle, there's no point. If the bottle hits the ground, it's a point. So there's an opportunity to score 3 points, right? If you
wouldn't that be two? Because you can't hit the pole and the bottle.
You can, though.
It'd be tricky.
It's a trick shot.
The speed of the game is too much. It's just like the NFL.
But if you catch the bottle before it hits the ground, it's no point.
Okay.
Okay.
But like if you hit the so yeah, maybe it is.
So if you hit the bottle, I catch it, do you get a point for hitting the bottle?
You get 1 point for hitting the bottle, but you don't get a point for hitting the ground.
So even if I caught it, it's still 1 point
it's
for
one
you.
It's 1 point, yep.
Okay.
And then if you drop, okay, that's where you can get the 3 points in, because every time the frisbee gets thrown, you got to have a beer in your hand, and you got to catch the frisbee.
Okay.
So if the frisbee hits the ground, it's another point.
Okay.
So that's how you can get three. So you hit the bottle, you drop the bottle, you drop the frisbee, it's 3 points.
Aren't you just chucking the damn thing, trying to nail it so these guys can't catch it?
Well, pretty much.
That's
part of it. Yeah. That's what it's
well, you're trying to aim. You got to hit it. You got to hit it. But so that's part of it. But the other thing, that was your variation of the house rules. We did it a little bit differently just because we were trying to figure some stuff out. And so we went on opposite sides.
Okay, like bags.
So yeah, like bags. Just because for us, it just didn't seem to make like logical sense. Because then you're waiting like one throw. And then back, like you can just in constant motion if you're kind of throwing it to your teammate, so to speak, it sped it up a little bit.
Okay, so how we did it was like every turn, like if I caught it, then it was, or you know, like so I threw,
right.
They catch, they throw it back, then it's my buddy's turn, he throws it back.
Yeah, and after a while, then we negated the catching the frisbee points, just because.
You guys were
drunk. Also with the kind of pipe that they had. If you hit the front of it, it was bouncing so far back the other way that there was literally no possible way for anybody to catch it.
Well, that's the speed thing.
If
that
you're
pipe
playing,
bomb was
if you're playing
there.
With like a wooden stake, it kind of, you know, it'll kind of fall into it and you have a chance.
A wooden
it was
stake
ricocheting.
Probably is easier to play.
Yeah, it was ricocheting so hard off that we were just like, screw that. So it was 2 points if you hit the bottle, 1 point if you hit the pole. And then if you caught the bottle, it just negated the points.
I can't even.
So the bottle had to hit the ground.
I couldn't even venture to guess how many hours I spent.
It's a fun game.
Playing this shit in my backyard.
It's a fun game.
Nice.
Just.
Yeah, it's my favorite holiday. You don't have to buy anybody anything. And like you guys
said.
Yeah,
no presents.
That's a good point. I didn't even think of
you
that.
You eat, you drink all day, and you watch shit blow up. What could be better?
I
love it.
The only presents that you're buying are the fireworks that I have somebody else blow them off because I think that's more fun.
Oh, you were talking about
fireworks. I'm not a big fan standing on top of the explosives, but I love being like within 5 feet.
Oh, yeah.
Like knowing that there's still like the little bit of danger. Like they, oh man, like, shit, if this thing really fucker really blows.
JPP up in here. See, when you said blow up, I thought you meant like those girls you haven't seen from high school at the pool party.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
or that's like when I show up in my fucking swim trunks.
Hey, what's up, guys? How's it going? You just jump in. Oh, I guess it's not a pool party anymore.
Hanging out, drinking.
Turn this thing
quarry
into a bathtub.
Oh, that's awesome. All right, to close the show, everybody, name something that you absolutely hate about Tim Allen. Anthony.
That I hate about Tim Allen? One time he pulled a knife on me.
He pulled a knife on you?
Yeah, not long ago. It was like, what was that, like late May, early June, I want to say.
Did he draw blood?
No, he just pulled it on me, and it was one of the most terrifying things I've ever seen.
Man,
because
he
sitting,
had the... Brittany, see, here's I think the you're thing. Sitting right where you were there.
Yeah.
Tim gets up off the couch and goes, hey, Mandela. And right when he turns around,
and here's the thing, too. The brother's the brother's got sunglasses on, and I could still see the crazy in his eyes. He was ready. He wasn't even afraid. He had been there before. He had been in that situation before. He didn't give any fucks.
Oh, that's too good.
Taush, what do you hate about
Tim? No, you go first. I'm trying to go through all the fucking things I want to say.
What from that?
Yeah, well, you're talking about hating Tim Allen. I got
You were bone your whole body, not a bead of sweat on you, and then you start laughing so hard, now you're just like a greased pig.
Oh, that is too good. Well, and we were talking about when Clemens ate your sandwich. That's true.
Yeah, that got the anger started.
Grand
for me,
theft lunch.
You know, he doesn't like Budweiser, that dumb bastard.
I don't like Budweiser either.
Well, okay. Sorry. You're in the same boat.
I guess this is the last Professor and Pipe Bomb podcast.
Yeah, until you start seeing things my way, the right way.
I will say I have been trying to move towards the diesel version of the Bud.
Delicious.
What is that?
Regular Bud.
Regular Bud. Yeah.
Oh. Because
usually I go off.
Were they the ones that had that Black Crown thing for a while? Was that Budweiser? It would make sense because they got the crown.
Yeah, that was like
years ago,
like,
or Black Select or something.
Well, and
yeah,
then they had
Bud Select.
That wasn't terrible.
Bud Premium. Yeah, Bud Select. Wasn't there a premium?
Bud
or
Light.
Platinum.
Bud Light. Platinum. Don't even waste my time.
And now they've got
Bud Light guy.
It's just seltzer water.
Now they got some fucking presidential version or some shit.
Okay.
Red Ribbon, I don't know. Something.
Oh, I thought it was
going
to be like an orange can.
I haven't tried it.
Well, or Busch Lattes or something that I'm always down to.
Yeah,
to
I'm kind of like those two.
I'm partial to, if I'm going to drink Bud, usually I'm now opting for the red can.
Okay.
I think there's more flavor
Smart
in the red
man.
Can.
Yes.
But if I'm going to go for a light beer, I'm probably chugging, I'm probably drinking all day, then I'm going to go with the Busch Lights.
All right. Well, that doesn't get you out of the why you hate Tim Allen.
Oh, fuck.
Wow. I could think of a bunch of reasons for you, but I don't want to put words in your mouth.
There's a lot of different things that I could go with.
I think part of you hates that it's not the Taush and Tim podcast.
Well, I mean, it just starts with an A after the T. I think it makes more sense. No, I'm just I would go with sometimes that dude he's particular to a fault. And he's anal to a fault about
almost
things.
Almost like a Joe Zenzola?
But he will not fucking admit it. He will not admit that he is anal as fuck about certain things. And like it makes him good.
Look,
there is a right and a wrong way
to cut a highlight.
Yeah, but he has
look.
Well, Timmy could be passive aggressive at times.
Passively aggressive. And
there
he
was
wants,
a couple times
I love
where
that
I didn't
guy.
Do
wanna
something,
go at it. Yeah.
Like you said, exactly the right way. And he goes... Figure it out
or
he's find somebody
wrong.
Who knows what the fuck they're doing. I was like, oh, thanks, Timmy. Thanks, bud.
But you know what?
In the same vein,
he's right.
Because
once we're on the microphone and we're going with it, we want it fucking done right, too.
I've gotten infinitely better at my job because of working with Tim Allen.
1,000%. 1,000%.
Absolutely. And Tim is one that sat there and, you know, he will take a stand and stand up for you. And, you know, he's loyal and he's honest. And
No kidding.
He'll pull a knife on you, but he'll take a bullet for you.
Yeah. You know, the exact.
He'll figure that one out. He'll kill you, but he won't let anyone else.
He won't let anybody else. That's my motherfucker that I'm getting. That's the blood on my hands. Oh, wow.
There's some of his red.
That got dark real
quick. Well, on that happy note.
And he knows
fuckers.
All the words to the Laverne and Shirley theme song.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. It's been fun.
Yeah, this is something else, man.
Make sure that you like and subscribe. on iTunes and on the radio.com app, Tim and Tausch in the Morning Podcast.
You mean the producer podcast?
Oh, that's what this is?
Yeah.
Yeah,
man.
Fuck yeah. Subscribe to that one too.
Professor Pipebomb, Tim and Tausch. Brewers coverage, Bucks coverage, everything, man. Subscribe.
And
we'll
World According to Sparky. You forgot about that.
Oh, yeah, the World According to Sparky.
That's one of my
favorites. And the WWE podcast.
Cody Grant.
Yeah,
There's the Cody Grant and Ryan Horvath podcast.
They're doing one now, too.
Yeah. Every Wednesday, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, they talk a lot about gambling, wrestling.
I'm going to admit it right now. I don't even listen to the podcast that I'm in after. I don't listen to any of our podcasts.
I just like that you guys will fire a couple of shots in this. This was fun.
Well, you know, we got to. You guys have been begging for it. So, you know, finally we throw some shit your way, you know.
Pipe Bomb and the Professor. Or the Professor and Pipe Bomb.
Yes.
It rolls better, yeah.
You know, well, but yeah, you guys voted me most likely to be
literate one here. He's going to tell us how to talk.
Heaven forbid I've read
God
a book.
God forbid.
You know, you fuckers voted me most likely to be arrested on your TNT
Ooh,
podcast.
Ooh, I didn't hear that. What was I voted most
likely
to?
Hey, I just couldn't put the odds in my favor.
What was I voted most likely to?
I walk around with a halo. I'm a fucking angel. I don't know what's wrong with you guys.
I think you were in the middle of the pack. I think I put you at like 15-1.
Your odds went up after you bought that white van with no windows.
Okay.
Then you know,
that was the mid-season adjustment.
That's fair. And to be fair also, it looked a lot worse before I pounded the dents into it.
Got to class it up, brother.
Pipe bombs in 3-2.
Nothing but Werther's originals in the glove box.
That's where the smart money's going.
Like I said, I'm an angel, man. I'm an angel. I would never even dream of breaking the law.
Hey, I was only at like 4-1, so I'm not far behind you.
Hey, Pipe Bomb, where do they follow you on Twitter?
At Jeff_Orlowski.
Can we spell that? Because I think some of our cohorts do not know how to pronounce your name.
Well, yeah.
You spell it. There is no W.
Nope, no W, and it's O-R-L-O, even though it's pronounced Orla, it's O-R-L-O and the ski.
Perfect.
Tausch, where are you at?
Bill Schmidt Radio.
Mandela.
At Anthony Mandela.
No underscore, you bastard.
Yep. Take care of business.
You gotta be a figure as a fucking professor has to make it easy on you.
It's just
well,
a name.
I learned something today. Practice makes
permanent.
Permanent. I fucking love that. I love that. All right. Well,
see, I learned that kind of thing in school. Maybe if you showed up.
I had better things to do.
No shit. The ladies wouldn't let me. All right.
All two of them.
Yeah. Quality, not quantity? Fuck that. All right, Milwaukee. Later.